Hey. Welcome back, everybody.
Cheers.
Big news this week.
What's the big news?
The writer's strike is over. Yay! What does that mean for us?
Less reality TV.
Colbert's back. Yeah. Big Brother's winter season might be too far in development that they won't cancel it at this point. So we still might get that. So that would be cool. And Hot D has just finished filming. Which is not really related to the writer's strike.
Because they were filming anyway.
Right. Say if there's any changes that need to get made, though, they could technically write them right now, I think. And sources tell us that summer 2024 is when Hot D Part 2, Season 2, will drop.
I feel so far away. I'm so excited. It feels so far away. As we mourn the end of summer 2023, the thought of summer 2024 feels like a lifetime away, but I'm so excited.
Yeah, me too.
So excited.
What do you think about TV shows that are premiere TV programs from networks like this? Being totally fine with setting the bar to wait as long as Puff Daddy would wait to drop a new album. You know, like it's 3 years. Like Muse puts out a record every 3 or 4 years, like clockwork. A lot of the big artists do that. Adele Dazeem, same thing. Mm-hmm. 3, 4 years. New album gets dropped. I feel like that's the separation right now. Things evolved over time where there was a lot of really premier prestige. That's what I was looking for. TV shows. But they were stuck in the pattern of what things were at the time. When it all kind of started with The Sopranos, some would say Twin Peaks. A TV show was expected to drop a new season every year.
Right.
That's just kind of what you did. And then there were so many prestige TV shows after like Mad Men ended, Breaking Bad ended, Game of Thrones was in season two, season three, every network, places like Netflix, places like Amazon Prime, AMC, CISO, all these different, you know what I'm saying? Like that became the standard that everyone was creating these epics. And I feel like the way that these shows have distinguished themselves from other shows is waiting. Hands are rolling her eyes right now. Is waiting like an album drop where it's like, oh, we're not coming back every year. It's we're coming back on the pace that's best for us to make the show. Why don't you like that?
As somebody who knows literally nothing about the back end of scheduling these types of things, who knows? Maybe that's something that goes into play. I just think that it's boring, or you know, I feel like I'm burned a little from Game of Thrones because we had that long pause between the seasons, between the shortened season 7 and 8 leading up to those two.
And then
how long was the pause? Like a year and a half?
Yeah, I think. Yeah.
It felt like forever.
It was 2017 to 2019. Summer 2017.
Really? And then we came back to something that was less good than what it was before, in my opinion. And so I feel like if you're going to take that extra time, let's make it better. Let's make it grander and bigger and wilder and more exciting. But with Game of Thrones, I personally feel like it did not happen that way.
So you're just burned.
So I just feel a little burned by that. I also feel like there, especially when it comes to a TV show that everybody really likes, there's so much momentum that adds to the excitement and the fun part of enjoying a piece of media. The pacing of it is half the fun and the excitement and the momentum. It's like a holiday. It's like, you know, every spring it's time for The Bachelorette to come on. You know what I mean? Like that tradition of the timing.
It's like a holiday.
Yeah. I think that that's really fun. And so I personally feel like, again, as somebody who knows nothing, shows and series and franchises will do themselves a disservice by cutting themselves at the knee and taking this extra time between seasons. If it was there's exactly 2 years between the seasons, or there's exactly 18 months between the seasons, then maybe that I would feel differently. But it's a question or an unknown of, is this even going to happen at all, that I find to be, I don't like it. But I also understand that like shows need to get renewed and shows need to have their contracts updated and blah, 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 all these things that I don't necessarily know the inner workings of. And so some of that may be at play when it comes to some of these TV shows. I don't know exactly what that looks like for House of the Dragon per se, but if we're just talking from a purely viewing perspective, pump out that content. Give it, there's, you're not lacking for ideas or things to write about or areas of the world. Yeah, source material. There's so much source material. So you're not necessarily running on, running into a wall of something to do something on. So let's knock them all out, have that momentum on our side, and enjoy the ride. But that's just me personally.
I can understand. I hear what you're saying. If this, for example, if the strike had affected this season of Hot D and it was delayed for some reason because of that, then that would be a technicality that you could account for. Or if there was so much filming, whether it's 15 episodes or it's 5 insane episodes, there was so much filming, it technically couldn't be done in a certain window of time, then again, that would make sense. This feels more like a choice, but it doesn't bother me as much as it could, because I don't think that the wait has been that long. And for me, what it does is create a lot more anticipation than if it was dropped at the same time every year. But I don't think it's because it can't be done in a small amount of time, because we saw a show like GOT back in a time where technology was way less convenient for the way that these productions are handled. Mm-hmm. And people were less excited to work on that project then. So mm-hmm. you have millions of greedy hands trying to get involved with putting their hands to clay to craft this thing, source material finished. I mean, it could get done in a certain amount of time if it needed to, but it seems like this definitely was a choice.
Well, I know that Hot D wasn't renewed until...
It was renewed immediately.
After the first episode?
I think so.
Wasn't it like episode 2 or something? Something like it was that. Somewhere really Does early on in the season. No, it doesn't matter, but it was really early on in the season. Yeah.
So they could have, you say that they could have put like their feet to the pavement and started
working on it. Or maybe that was the reason why we're getting a delay, is because, oh, we didn't know it was happening. So we need to...
fit into the grand schedule of Max.
Which... we didn't know House of the Dragon schedule was going to get renewed. Okay.
Yeah. Well, sure. I mean, it's never a given. Imagine being behind the scenes and working on it and being a human being that's involved and thinking like, yeah, you all think that HBO is going to give us tens of millions of dollars to make this, but they don't have to.
That's true. That's very true. That's very true. So maybe it feels like a choice. It feels like a stylistic choice that they're doing now let's make them
like
wait.
I said, it's like an album almost. Yeah. I'm not that mad about it because things are going so fast now and people's attention is so scattered that I see the potential benefit, but I also feel the benefit of knowing something like Big Brother is going to come every summer and it's like, oh, the live feeds are on in mm-hmm. September and in August, and that'll be a fun thing to do then, or like Love Island or something. Mm-hmm. That'll be a fun thing to do then. Another one of my favorite authors dropped a book, I think year after year, recently, this past week, and just having that book right now has been amazing. Mm-hmm. I've wanted to read it as fast as possible so that time enjoyment window would be very small, but that has been amazing. Mm-hmm. So it's, I don't know. I don't know if there's a right answer, but I think that the way that we interact with this stuff is part of the experience now, which is way better than losing track of it within the noise of everything else. And also you have to think about everybody else that this is being created for, not just the diehard people that are interested in it. The fact that there's a little bit of a gap can either serve to, like you said, people might forget it. It might not be able to enjoy the momentum of the way that it's released. I mean, if they release an episode every 3 months, then definitely a lot of the fervor would cease. But I think that they hit a sweet spot with that weekly release that places like Max still do with the prestige shows.
Right.
Hot D.
I was thinking the same thing.
Which Netflix doesn't do with stuff that it spends even more money on.
Right.
Which I think has been a bad thing.
What a relief that we're not being asked to binge it all in 1 week or something like that. I definitely agree.
But that same sort of principle could be argued for the release pattern of it going year after year. So if we appreciate the week after week thing, I guess the scale of that would be year after year. Mm-hmm. Like the sort of equivalent to that would be year after year. So there's got to be a bigger reason that either I'm not smart enough to know about or someone's not smarter than you to know about.
I just hope that, well, I'm going to believe that there is either a stylistic choice, a contractual choice, or some greater powers that be, and not just a, well, we'll wait. which I feel so pessimistic on that front.
I doubt it.
It's like, well, because listen, we both have jobs.
Sure.
And the vibes at work is often, we'll just wait. Just put it off, you know? So it's like, I'm like, but.
Yeah. Well, because work isn't everything and this is a job for folks.
Right.
Yeah, so I get that. That's like the long night. They're like, this is one episode. Yes. White Walkers in one episode.
Like I said, I feel a little burned by the end of Game of Thrones. I know a lot of people feel burned by the end of Game of Thrones because we took a break and then it felt a little bit phoned in for the last two quote unquote seasons that we had. And so
I don't think it's Ryan and George. I think it's HBO trying to keep their market share, their value, the value of their streaming platform as they do all this weird stuff and renaming and reshuffling and buying the rights to other things. Mm-hmm. I think they're trying to use tent poles like GOT, like Hot D to stay interesting to people. So when they come and shop for it, they can also shop for their other things that they're trying to sell.
Right.
Which is super annoying. And it must annoy the people creating this product.
Oh, for sure.
But it's like, comes with the territory, I guess. Sure. But that's what it feels like to me, that they're like, oh, people will be interested in Hot D for the next year and a half, no problem. We don't have to keep coming at them with it. And then after a year and a half, 2 years, boom, all of you guys come right back and look at all the other stuff we're showing you. Also, we've changed our name two times.
Yeah. You have to download three new apps to get into this. I agree. It's definitely going to be their choice, I would think.
When is George R. R. Martin going to start his own streaming platform just for his stories?
Right.
Like, go completely independent. And I don't know, like maybe crowdfund the production for adaptations of things. There's enough stuff.
I was going to say, how much content would you need to feel like you could have your own streaming platform? But I guess it's not like a network where you're trying to have something on the air 24 hours a day.
Right.
And so
it could be on demand.
Right.
Just exactly. On demand. Just this season of like Dunkin' Egg Book One, $65.
Yeah.
Speaking of... So that means that now the strike is over, that means people can start writing on this. And I've been thinking about it a lot over the past week. And we've been talking about it because we've been going through the Hedge Knight and now the Sworn Sword now for a couple months. This was a story that we've been waiting to do at a certain time on the podcast. And now that we're deep into it, I think everything feels a little extra special because you're in the middle of reading it for the podcast. So it gets a little unfair advantage in my imagination, at least, of how cool it would be if anything was done associated with it. But we were talking about this the other day. The more that I imagine this and the more that I know that it's a reality, the more obvious to me that Dunkin' Egg, the Knight of the Seven Kingdoms, has a possibility of being the coolest adaptation so far that we've seen. And I think maybe even cooler than GOT in certain respects because of the elements that it sticks to and the potentially cringy stuff that it walks away from.
I completely agree with you because we were talking about and thinking about how popular Arya and the Hound was and how much of Dunkin' Egg's interactions with each other. I guess it's just because one is old and one is young. So maybe the similarities are very
one's really tall, few. One's really short.
Tall, one's really short. They're riding a horse. Okay, that's it.
Insolent youth versus gruff masculinity.
Exactly. So maybe the comparisons are not as one-to-one as what maybe I'm trying to make them seem. But those characters interacting with each other really struck a chord with a lot of Game of Thrones viewers. And so the idea of having some of those early Game of Thrones vibes with a lot of tourneys and wandering and personal relationships to be drawn out into its own entire series.
To be focused on that.
I think people would eat that up.
Yeah.
I have been having an unbelievable time reading these stories. I was somebody who, I wouldn't say dismissed them, but just was not interested in them. Even me, who is about as diehard of a fan as it gets.
You're like, I have to get through the Myrinese Knot. I will save that for later.
Exactly. I don't need another, I was going to say headache. That's not the right word. But you know what I mean? If somebody like me is kind of putting this off for another time, I feel like people would be so pleasantly surprised to watch this TV show. And I think that these characters, as we've been talking about in the podcast, are so lovable and so... We love Dunkin' Egg. We love these guys.
Yeah, we were saying something that we like about them in another book that we were talking about is that these two characters that are the focus is that the thing about them is that deep down we know they are good. We're not reading about bad people. And for us personally, it's been enjoyable to read to see how they deal with people who are less good mm-hmm. in a world that's tough.
It's a little more straightforward, which is, I remember saying that at the very beginning when the Lannister was the bad guy. We were like, ah, yes. Wasn't it? No, it was Targaryen. Sorry. Whatever. At the beginning of Hedge Knight, when it was the Targaryens were the bad guys. We were like, ah, yes.
Yeah, you're right. Fire and blood. It's like, we like them.
Yeah.
we like that they're flying over fields and burning them.
I think that
we're cheering for this.
These stories, the Hedge Knight, all of this would make such a good TV show. It would be, it's already there like everything else is. It's short enough where it's easy to digest. And I just feel like there's so much colorful life in these stories. And I've been having such a good time reading them that it would be a no-brainer to adapt these. Even easier than something like Fire and Blood And maybe it's a little bit less appealing because we're not talking about ancient history in Westeros or big names. Like, we couldn't flash Daenerys's name at the start of the series.
But Bloodraven.
Right. But Bloodraven and just anybody who is into...
Well, imagine the stable and the Hedge Knight, and it's been Dunk arguing with the kid who followed him from where Hot Pie used to live. I'm thinking of a casual viewer mm-hmm, watching mm-hmm. this, right? And then he's peering into the stable, and this is after someone was mean to him, and people have already seen the regalia, but now he's eavesdropping on an important conversation. And we talked about this before, but it went from the Hound and Arya traveling and having arguments and observations about the world around them to it's now an adult TV show. There's very serious people talking about very serious things. And that all happened not in one POV and then switched to another like it did in POV, but it's all happening in the same place at the same time. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I think playing around with that from a directing standpoint would be really interesting. Mm-hmm. As far as the time period is concerned, Hot D's playing around in an alternate time period as well. And it's worked well, I think. People still remember. They're building out the universe in a way where people still remember King's Landing. People still remember a lot of the places. When we go into Winterfell next season, it's going to strike a chord, I think, in a big way with a lot of people who like Game of Thrones, because a lot of people really associate that vibe with their enjoyment of prestige TV in mm-hmm. the teens. And I think it's going to bring back a lot of that for people. And so this has the opportunity to do that same thing again while chasing a lot of vibes. Mm-hmm. Hot D doesn't have that lighthearted nature that Game of Thrones had really at pretty much any point of it. When we talk about Otto Hightower, when Otto Hightower talks about hunting.
Yes.
When Viserys does a lot of things, there's these moments cut in, but it's still very Baroque almost, you know? So I think while people really love Hot D because of that, because of its very almost comic book-like anime-like sticking to a style like that with its live-action representation of dragons doing things that would be in a crazy anime that's definitely going to come way later in Hot D as well. That's very stylistic and enjoyable, but I think that this could be something that a Dunkin' Egg adaptation could be something that has a lot of the spirit that GOT had, but mm-hmm. very focused. And if they cast it right, if they have a really good egg and a really good dunk, then people are going to be peeled to their TV screens.
Mm-hmm. Well, because it's that element, like you're saying, that we're missing from some of the more serious things happening in Westeros and at either the end of Game of Thrones or with House of the Dragon. This book is funny.
And very funny.
I don't want to say lighthearted. I tried to make that argument to you when we first were having this conversation. I was like, this series is so much more lighthearted. And you reminded me of all the high stakes that we had in the Hedge Knight when Dunk is...
They broke Tonsil's fingers.
Yeah. It was dark. But it just... I guess that the way that it's written and these characters and seeing it from Dunk's point of view and... the fact that Egg is kind of here undercover and the fact that all of the high stakes are very localized to Dunk's life, as we kind of see in this chapter when Egg wants to call for more help, basically, because he's worried about all of these ruffians coming together to fight real knights. And he's talking about how small these conflicts are. And so what's the point?
Yeah.
You know, everything that's happening is very localized. And so it makes it feel really intimate, and it makes it feel, instead of the whole world is about to burn down and the dead are coming and everybody's going to die, it's, okay, we have this issue with water up the road and here's our boys that we need to train up. It just feels way more intimate, which adds to it almost, I guess, makes it feel more lighthearted simply because we're not worried about the fate of the world. We're just trying to handle some interpersonal conflicts.
That's Egg's argument.
Yeah.
About whether or not they should put their lives
right,
at stake.
Right, then right,
if it's
right.
just about some water.
And Bennis's argument.
Yeah, Bennis at this point, that was his original argument. At this point, he's like, whatever, I'll be fine.
Right.
He's like, I might go end up working for the spider lady at some point. I'm just a hedge knight. So he's perfectly made for that job. Did you think that this chapter was going to go in that direction? Like, what were you expecting? Because I cut it off the reading at what I felt like was the right point after the encounter. So this starts with their short way back, some more berating from Bennis as they went back to Standfast and met Sir Eustace finally.
I think it went in the direction that I thought it would go. As I can't fully, classic, remember exactly what I was saying about it at the end of last episode. But I do think that this whole idea of, okay, well, now we have to tell him. So Bennis doesn't want to, Bennis and Dunk are having this conversation back and forth as they're coming back about whether or not him saying something was the right thing to do. And Bennis gives him this paragraph about how, because Dunk says a sworn sword owes his lord the truth. Like, it's our job to.
There's truth and truth.
Yeah. Bennis is like, there's truth and truth. Some don't serve, which I think is true in a lot of senses.
The
and
ultimate
so,
Bennis apologist.
Yeah. I'm not a Bennis apologist, but when you're talking about, and I think that Egg is making the same argument later on in the chapter, that there are some things that maybe are not worth everybody dying over, because Dunk is so, for lack of a better, I know we can't think of a better phrase, but he just is so deeply has this Gryffindor energy that it's like very brash and honor bound and straightforward thinking instead of a greater picture zooming out. How do we maybe better handle the situation? It's not Dunk's place to make that decision. He's just a knight. You know, it's not his responsibility to decide how Sir Eustace handles his affairs, which I feel so bad for that guy now. I didn't really have an idea of who he was going to be, but the fact that all of his kids and his wife have all recently died made me feel so sad for him as he's looking through all these different wares that he's collecting. I feel really bad for the guy. So I could see it going both ways, and I understand why Dunk feels and should feel like honor bound to just tell the truth. But it is an interesting argument that if we open up this can of worms, we don't really have the manpower or the resources to really do anything about it. It all just becomes about ego, and we need water to survive. So, well, something has to happen.
But ego for sure, but also it's a potential path to get the water back. So it's right. Like, what's worth it? Is it worth it to risk dying right now? Especially if whoever, say that they ride to Standfast, right? If they kill the 10 people that are going to be fighting, the 8 men, and then Dunk and Bennis, if they kill them, do they ride through all the hovels as well, all the surrounding small folk, and take them down? And so if they do, it's a sort of difference between suffering now or suffering later. I think that with the heat, if this water does not water their crops, some people are going to die, and they're not going to make money, and they're not going to have sustenance, and they're not going to have a way to make money. And so it's going to lead to trouble, maybe not as immediate as death, maybe death for some, but this is definitely death. So this is the gamble, the dice roll. Do we get our water back and avoid hardship altogether, other than the one that's built into our lives right now? Or do we play it safe and let folks walk on us and only maybe have 25% casualties as we would have otherwise if we didn't roll the dice? Like, the manifestation of there is truth and truth is basically what that is.
But Bennis already made that call, which Sir Eustace rolls his eyes at, because Bennis cut the guy's face. And Bennis is like, I could have done much worse. But I want to read exactly what he said. Eustace has also a lot of nostalgia attached to this little stream because he's been here his whole life. And so he's thinking about fishing there as a boy.
Checky water. Yeah.
The first girl he ever kissed. Oh, that his was so daughter. Nice. It's really sweet. He's got this deep love for, and I get that attaching so much meaning to a physical space. I thought it was really sweet. But he says Bettis cutting the man's face was ill considered. The woman has a spider's heart. She murdered three of her husbands, and all her brothers died in swaddling clothes. Five there were, or six, mayhaps. They stood between her and the castle. Da 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 da. She will not suffer such an insult. Make no mistake. She will come for you, as she came for Lem. So, Bennis made the call for them already, about essentially how this was going to go, because blood's already been shed.
What a serious bunch of lines there for him to say after he'd sort of been grandfatherly to mm-hmm. them up until that point. My brave Bennis, my good giant, mm-hmm. thanks for coming. And he goes, wait a second, that was a mistake. She's going to come for you.
Because it got very serious. It's one of those situations that could potentially have been handled through conversation. But instead, now they have to drop arms with these ragtag boys mm-hmm. who can barely see their left from their right foot.
Let me read. I'm going to read the context on that. I thought it was hilarious because, again, kind of like the Chuckling Brook line from the last podcast that we did, the first part of this story. I feel like there was ironically, leaps taken, some gambles taken with the descriptions. They were so evocative, but they were like fantasy video game evocative, which makes sense when you're building out inventories that people are going to quest in on a video game and they need to collect supplies, mm-hmm. especially if there's like bad guys there that are man-bodied and pig-headed with big tusks coming out and beads dangling all around that. Then you would use words like this for sure. But these are just people, and this is just outside of Standfast. I'm going to read part of the plan that Eustace comes up with, and part of the people that are going to help him execute that plan. It reads as such. Dunk asks if he should go contact Lord Rowan, because he's also being affected by the water in some way, to see if there was some assistance from a nearby lord. Sir Eustace says, or sorry, Lord Eustace, if he enjoys that styling, I will use it as well. Rowan? No. Look for no help there. Lord Rowan's sister wed Lord Mymon's cousin, Wendell, so he is kin to the Red Widow. Besides, he loves me not. Sir Duncan, on the morrow, you must make the rounds of all my villages and roust out every able-bodied man of fighting age. I am old, but I am not dead. The woman will soon find that the Checky Lion still has claws. That was ridiculous. And so here's the description. Sir Eustace's lands supported three small villages, none more than a handful of hovels, sheepfolds, and pigs. The largest boasted a thatched one-room sep with crude pictures of the Seven scratched upon the walls in charcoal. God, that's sad. Mudge, a stoop-backed old swine herd who'd once been to Old Town, led devotions there every seventh day. Twice a year, a real septon came through.
Once been to Old Town.
Twice a year, a real septon came through to forgive sins in the mother's name. The small folk were glad of the forgiveness, but hated the septon's visits all the same, since they were required to feed him. A humble tower.
This is the next couple of pages, but after the men show up, it's like the strapping, handsome peasant boys who won the hearts of high bar maidens in the songs were nowhere to be seen. So it's like the vibes of these places. Plus, it's so hot. Leaves are crumbling in Dunk's hand. Nobody has showered since last winter.
Well, Dunk and Egg have.
They have.
They find streams, luckily.
They get it.
Yeah.
But the vibes of this place are not
it's just lived
luxury
in. It's
yeah.
just lived in, just like the tower description, where it had been recently repaired, so there's old stone and new stone. And while we were here, go ahead and add some turrets to the top mm-hmm. of this side,
only so, this side, yeah,
right. but we're doing the actual work on it. Doesn't make sense to hurt the right. other stonework. It's humble, but it's nice, you know.
It is nice,
and it stands proudly on top of that hill, or sorry, bravely on top of that hill, which I thought was nice. It's not a castle, but it's a pretty nice tower. And I also love that it's four stories tall, but it has such a deep undercarriage into the hill. Mm-hmm. That sounds awesome.
It does sound really nice. I loved the description of the place. It felt like a respite from the heat, just even reading about being inside the hill.
Oh, for sure. The arrow holes. So I was imagining a potential siege. Mm-hmm. They could pull up that door. Mm-hmm. It could last for a little while. See, that's the thing. We only have 8-10 guys, but based on the geographical advantage, we could last for a while here.
Only two things of wine, though.
That's the problem. Maybe. That's the problem. Just, it depends on how big the casks are. Right. All right, because not all casts are created equally.
Carry them by himself. If it's so one of those little
baby casts that you can just hold, like, hey, you can carry it in somewhere yourself, that won't do
it. Egg was carrying it by himself.
Okay, no. But if there were barrels that had to be rolled, all right, we're good. We can last the siege at least because there's only 10 guys plus Sir Eustace.
True.
Plus all the ladies.
And some of them are pretty young. When's the last time you watched Mulan? It's been a million years since I watched it. But you know the training scenes of all of, like, I'll make a man out of you.
Oh, sure.
And all
I'm thinking
of them
of Robin Hood, Men in Tights. I'm thinking of Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves.
There's so many.
All. Yeah.
These
are formative
scenes.
Moments yes. of my childhood that made me, that set me on this path in mm-hmm. the first place. I'm mm-hmm. like, I want to fletch arrows.
Uh-huh. Mulan's the one that's the top of mind for me. But we've got guys drooling and falling. And
right.
they're just, they haven't done well in gym class. And so here is Bennis with his, he's making, what, one of the guys, what's his name? Like Big Rob or something? Or was it just at the Jonas Brothers concert?
Big
yeah,
Rob
his name
symbol.
Is Big Rob. He makes Big Rob cry, you know, because he doesn't want to do it
he chases
anymore.
Him down,
he chases
him, back.
Him down. Just the intensity of this training camp. And it feels so helpless. Like, there, it says Duncan Bennis drilled the little company amongst the pigs and chickens while Sir Eustace watched from the balcony above. It's just, it's so humble.
I've got a whole thing saved if you just want to talk about those guys for a second.
I would love to talk about
the next
guys.
Day, a dozen would-be warriors, not to be confused with the opening scene of Inglourious Bastards, that's what I imagined for a minute there, found their way to the Standfast to assemble among the chickens. One was too old, two were too young, and one skinny boy turned out to be a skinny girl. Those Dunk sent back to the villages, leaving eight. Three Watts, two Wills, a Lim, a Pate, and Big Rob, the Lackwit. A sorry lot, he could not help but think. The strapping, handsome peasant boys who won the hearts of highborn maidens and the songs were nowhere to be seen. Each man was dirtier than the last. Lim was 50, if he was a day, and Pate had weepy eyes. They were the only two who had ever soldiered before. Both had been gone with Sir Eustace and his sons to fight in the Blackfyre Rebellion. The other six were as green as Dunk had feared. All eight had lice. Two of the Watts were brothers. Guess your mother didn't know no other names, Bennis said, cackling. And as far as arms went, they brought a scythe, three hoes, an old knife, some stout wooden clubs. Lim had a sharpened stick that might serve for a spear. You know, like your favorite stick.
Yeah.
He brought it sheepishly. Imagine best, he picked it up as he
yeah,
left.
That's his best thing.
And one of the Wills allowed that he was good at chucking rocks. Well and good, Bennis said. We got us a bloody trebuchet. And after that, the man was known as Treb.
Incredible.
Well,
I love these guys.
I do too.
I love these guys. I love how they train, they make themselves shields. They got themselves
out of woven branches.
They're out here doing the best they can.
That is not a shield.
No, and eggs
that's a pretend shield.
Yeah.
I wanted to talk about that because I thought that Egg's perspective on whether or not they had any chance was interesting, but I thought that him discussing it at two different times, before the training and then after the training, it's before when the plan was being made, Dunk was telling him, hey, if we get people that volunteer for this, you're going to have to serve them.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, I'm going to have to serve small folk.
Mm-hmm.
And what is that, like the first time ever he seemed too arrogant mm-hmm. to be a part of this? He's always seen so down
combo.
To earth. And it's like, what the heck?
I love that. Can we read that really quick before we get to the second part? Because he talks about, Dunk talks about how Egg needs to be serving these men with respect, regardless of how they are. And if I was Egg's dad, it's like, this is what I let my kid out
That's
there for.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah.
Was for this kind of vibe, because in order to become the kind of leader I know you can become,
right.
to be able to serve the small folk just the same, I think is such a powerful.
It really makes you realize that none of this would have been allowed if it wasn't on the heels of what happened to Baylor Breakspear.
Yes,
like
yes.
It was so serious that he decided to go ahead and let his son do this.
Egg looked indignant. I have to serve small folk, not serve help. We will need to turn them into fighters. Then he talks about, you know, if they'll be good, they'll be good. How old were you when you took up your first sword? I was little, sir. The sword is made from wood. Common boys fight with wooden swords, too, only theirs are sticks and broken branches. Eggs, these men... Eggs. Egg.
We call them eggs.
Egg, these men may seem fools to you. They wouldn't know the proper names for bits of armor or the arms of the great houses or which king it was who abolished the lord's right to the first knight. But treat them with respect all the same. You're a squire born of noble blood, but you're still a boy. Most of them will be grown men. A man has his pride, no matter how lowborn he may be. You seem just as lost and stupid in their villages. And if you doubt that, go hoe a row and shear a sheep and tell me the names of all the weeds and wildflowers in Watts Wood. And then they kind of talk about like what they could teach each other.
The boy considered him for a moment. I really wanted to read it. I could teach them the arms of the great houses and how Queen Alysanne convinced King Jaehaerys to establish the first knight. And they could teach me which of the weeds are best for making poisons and whether of those green berries are safe to eat. They could, Duncan agreed, but before you get to King Jaehaerys, you best help us teach them how to use a spear. And don't go eating anything that Maester won't. Good advice all around.
It was great advice. And that coupled with we get a little bit later in the chapter, but Dunk is just reflecting on his time with Aeg and all the things they've seen and known and done together. You can feel we didn't get an opportunity to see their bond flourish because it wasn't written down, but you can feel it between the two of them during that conversation. And that's kind of what I was thinking about when I'm like, this will make such a great TV show because there is so much depth and history between these guys, but we've had 140 pages of them and they weren't even together the whole time and we didn't even see 90% of their adventures together. And so I find their dynamic to be pretty awesome. And I like to see the two of them going into this situation with their wildly different perspectives because I think that both are right. And so it makes for an interesting relationship between the two of them.
Yeah, and Aeg bringing these things up and Dunk then teaching him about that stuff is keeping that stuff fresh in Dunk's mind. And I think that's good because it's helping him make better decisions as the decisions start to land on his shoulders. Because if he wasn't thinking about it, he could do something else. You know what I mean? It's like me, I feel like having my dog makes me a better person because I'm mindful of the needs of someone else in a certain way. And it's not the same exact thing, but at least he's got this thing that he has to try to think of setting the best example for, or at least think of how to enunciate what his feelings are. Mm-hmm. And I think enunciating what your feelings are helps you remember your feelings at all. I wanted to read some of that context that you were just talking about. It popped up later in the chapter, and I wanted to start our conversation with this before we got sidetracked talking about the TV show. Speaking of Aeg reaching for his boot, imagine how cool that would be adapted. Just the, like the music would slow down and you would feel that like, wait, we could break the head off. Uh-huh. I mean, reading it alone scratches your subconscious. Mm-hmm. And this was the first time it happened and it's going to happen again. But seeing that adapted and knowing that you could basically change everything that's happening right now. What a crazy little situation for George to write in there. You could change everything right now just by calling the help of others because you have the supreme power of the land. You just have to be able to get the message to them fast enough. So this is an excerpt from, like I said, later in the chapter, but gives context on what we were asking about in the last podcast, the first part of the Sworn Sword, which is what the heck did Dunk and Aeg do between the Ashford tournament and now? Aeg had served Dunk for a good year and a half, though some days it seemed like 20. They had climbed the Prince's Pass together and crossed the deep sands of Dorne, both red and white. A pole boat had taken them down into the Greenblood, down the Greenblood to Plankytown, where they took passage for Old Town on the Galleous White Lady. They had slept in stables, inns, and ditches, broken bread with holy brothers, whores, and mummers, and chased down 100 puppet shows. And chase down 100 puppet shows.
I put a little heart next to that in my book.
So you're telling me we're sitting here bragging about Dunk teaching Aeg all these wonderful things that his Targaryen family would appreciate. And they spent how long chasing down 100 puppet shows?
It's all
a good
lesson. It's all an important lesson. Uh-huh.
Aeg had kept Dunk's horse groomed, his long sword sharp, his mail free of rust. He had been as good a companion as any man could wish for, and the hedge knight had come to think of him almost as a little brother. He isn't, though. This Aeg had been hatched of dragons, not of chickens. Aeg might be a hedge knight squire, but Aegon of House Targaryen was the fourth, youngest son of Maekar, Prince of Summerhall, himself the fourth son of late King Dairon the Good, the second of his name, who'd sat on the Iron Throne for 25 years until the Great Spring Sickness took him off. So he's coming from someone that ruled for 25 years. So he's one of the long boys.
This is not a new dynasty.
Not the longest boy. He's no Jaehaerys, he's no Viserys, but he's a long boy. Mm-hmm. He's pretty close to Viserys.
I think that having this intimate issue being the central, at least to this point, conflict is bringing out the best between their two dynamics. And so I've been really enjoying it.
What do you think about the boy trouble that Egg's having between Bennis and him?
Oh, the pinching,
and he spat between his toes.
That was so gross. Dude. The description of that was gross.
Yeah.
I think that Dunk remembering is like the same thing used to happen to me.
Same guy, too,
which is kind of wild, yeah. If you think about it. How old is Bennis?
It's like having the same teacher as your parents.
Exactly. You know what that's like.
I have had that experience, yes.
I feel bad for Egg. I don't know. I feel like all of these things are probably really good for him, because if he wants to be a good little princeling, then having these things happen to him is going to build his character. And so you hate to see it, and it's gross. But he's out there on the road. Like, what does he expect?
If he had an inkling, Dunk says this, who you were, he'd piss himself before he laid a finger on you.
I love that. I hope Bennis maybe has the opportunity to find out. That would rule. It would be amazing.
Yeah, it would.
But it might be too far down the road for Bennis already knows Egg pretty well at this point. But I don't know. Maybe it'd make him feel really bad.
I think that'd make him piss himself even more because he's done so much.
Right.
You know? If you're able to stem the flow right at the top, then that's fine. But if you wait so long.
True.
Yee.
So, curious about that. But Bennis lived up to what we thought he was going to in the last chapter.
He was so much worse in this chapter,
too. He was way worse. Because I was thinking maybe at the end of last chapter, or last portion, maybe we were being too hard on him. Just because
we were being nice about Bennis. What are you talking about?
We were making fun of
him. We're the first people to ever say a nice thing about Bennis.
Okay, well, there's some nice things to say about him.
Yeah.
Which is, he makes, like I was saying, he made a good point to Dunk about some truths are whatever
he said.
Yeah, no,
you're right. Yeah, it's kind of like the same point that he made whether or not to ride up the river in the last one.
So that's one good point about Bennis. But he really lived up to his name in this one. And the fact that he made Big Rob cry is pretty messed up.
This is my favorite bit of Bennis from this chapter. The belly and the throat are best. This is when he teaches them how to kill people, I find. He pounded his fist against his chest. Right, there's the heart. That will do the job as well. Trouble is, the ribs is in the way. The belly's nice and soft. Gutting slow, but certain. Never knew a man to live when his guts were hanging out. Now, if some fool goes and turns his back on you, put your point between his shoulder blades or through his kidney. That's here. They don't live long enough once you prick him in the kidney. He says, stick and twist and rip it free. Stick and twist and rip, but get the damn thing out. You'll be wanting it soon enough for the next one. Too slow, Treb. Too damn slow. If you can't do it quicker, go back to chucking rocks. Lem, get your weight behind your thrust. There's a boy. And in and out and in and out. Fuck him with it. That's the way. In and out. Rip him. Rip him. Rip him. Hell yeah.
Listen, he, for all of his faults, and we'll see what happens with our little company, but he's given him a pretty good lesson, and the vibes are really, really high.
They fed him soup.
Yeah.
They gave him a really square meal that they didn't have to make themselves. It's like they feel like they're a part of a pro sports team.
Well,
right,
exactly,
now.
Because they're out there training really hard. So they've been through a lot of physical labor. They have this like grand idealization of they're going to war for their guy.
Right.
Even if he's small.
But it's big for them.
But it's big for them.
They're from swine holes.
And it's the only time that something like this has happened. Nothing's happening to them, but now they have an opportunity to prove themselves. And they're talking about how they can take any Kingsguard knight, basically.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
At this point, they're really hyping themselves up. The vibes are so high at dinner. They've got a bed to sleep on. That warmed my heart a little bit. And then
Bennis is telling him about loot and women.
Yeah, yeah. I thought it was really nice, the whole thing. Then Bennis kind of ruins it by killing the mood and being like,
Hannah's holding her book directly. I can't even see your face. She's just holding this. I've never seen this before.
I don't know where to put my book
do
right
that.
Now.
I just think this is going to be good.
I'm not even going to end up reading anything.
Like Moses.
I'm not even going to end up reading anything, but Bennis is talking about how this would have been better if Sir Useless, as he said, would have had a couple more bastard boys that could have grown up to be good soldiers.
That's the PG version you just read.
The vibes are, that's why I didn't read it. The vibes are so high. They had a nice little dinner. They think that they're going to be the ones. And then Bennis has to be mean and talk about how much these guys can't do it, you know?
This was going to be one of my owns, but I'm just going to read it now. Sir Useless should have fucked a few more peasant wenches while he still had a bit of sap left in them old sad balls of his, he said. Hannah's shaking her head. If he'd sowed himself a nice crop of bastard boys back then, maybe we'd have some soldiers now.
Maybe we would have had those soldiers that the highborn maidens would have been into. But
right. You see, if you have the soldiers, what comes first? The maidens that interest the soldiers coming or the soldiers that attract the maidens?
Soldiers that attract the maidens.
And so maybe some of these ladies around the hovels and swine pits would have like showered every once in a while if there was soldiers around, like legit guys around, right? Is that what you're saying? But they traveled there.
No, I'm saying that like the highborn girlies, like
you don't have to be highborn to be a maiden though, do you?
No, but they're the ones that are interested in the peasant boys from out in the sticks who are strapping. They don't know the ways of court, but they're strong.
He doesn't know how to do math, but he's carried logs his whole life. You know how wide a back can get when you have to strap logs across it?
It's what the highborn maidens want.
Right.
It's what the girlies crave. But right. None of that is to be found. But I feel like all of this, what's the word I'm thinking of? The fact that these guys aren't that good, we are in the throes of a true comeback story. Like, this has got to be a comeback story, right?
Okay.
We've got to have some success, right?
So what are you picturing?
Like, all of these boys, this made me laugh out loud. The barleycorn, the four barleycorns, the two melons, the two beans.
Yeah, we'll name them after their crops, but they end up having the same problem because all the Watts are from the same crop, you dings.
The men were thrilled to have been given lords' names. Save for Big Rob, who cannot seem to remember whether he was a bean or a barleycorn.
Easy mistake.
I don't know why that made me laugh so hard. Anyway, our barleycorn, bean, and melon boys are going to continue to train, and then they're going to march their ways up there, and they're going to use their little woven shields, and they're going to do all the things they need to do.
Stab, twist, rip.
Exactly. They're going to break down the dam so the water starts flowing.
Treb, throw rocks at it.
Everyone's so excited. And then they're going to lift their shields high over their heads and march triumphantly back to their
Osgray
guy, chanting and singing. And Egg's going to be like, wow, even the small folk deserve my respect.
A tear rolls down Bennis's eye. I was wrong about you guys. You're not a lunk.
No more, nothing about Blood Raven. Egg is not going to be found out. There's nothing going on. That's how it's going to go in my heart and my mind.
Okay. So what do you think about this Red Widow? Like, is she going to be a witch with eight legs?
Man, I didn't know what to think about her until we read that line about her brothers and her husbands that she
got rid of.
She seems pretty fierce. I feel like Eustace, for all of his, I guess, uselessness, is definitely going to have a pulse on the vibe. And so if he is cautious about a lady like her, then maybe she really is scary.
It wasn't thunder. I haven't had lunch yet.
I'm curious.
I think that's a good point.
Yeah, I'm curious to see her and see what she's like. Because a spider's heart, a murderer of her three husbands, she's just trying to get ahead. But then at the same time, she's on the same level as Eustace, which is not really that high, you know?
It seems like she has way better nights, though, because they're scared of that.
Better nights, more nights, but she's still a little fish in a big pond.
I think
that's
a really good point.
How scary can she actually be, especially if you have a guy like Egg on your side who can maybe give you some more context, or if necessary, call upon his family.
Link just nailed it, yeah.
Yeah, which
the boot being there is like the version of Dunk not being smart enough to take everything as seriously as he should.
Right.
It creates the same sort of like confidence that having the boot has. So they both have the same level of confidence.
The trump card behind them. And Egg is so concerned about these guys. And he's just has like this really genuine heart about, why are we sending them out there?
Yeah.
They're gonna die. This is not necessary. And so I think it might be cool and interesting to see this Spider-Woman, who is a big fish in a little pond and kind of runs her little area, imagine her prowess or lack thereof up against the Targaryen forces, if they ever came to that point. Sure. I don't know.
Yeah, there'd be no way.
But I'm interested to see what she's like.
Then we shouldn't have named them, sir. It will only make the grief harder for us when they die. That's what Egg says about the men and the names that they gave them. And connects back to the point that Egg made about why he doesn't like Bennis, that Bennis doesn't name his horse.
Right.
Egg's like, well, we shouldn't have named these guys because they're going to die. But you're hopeful.
I feel hopeful. Like I said, I think the biggest thing that kind of caught my attention, which we haven't talked that much about, but the whole conversation about Egg needing to stay hidden and how the whole reason why he can be out here is because nobody can know who he is and where he is. And Dunk makes a reference to Bloodraven having 1,000 eyes and one. And so I just feel like Egg is still a little kid. He's 10 and he's seen a lot in the year and a half that he's been with Dunk, and they've been a lot of places, but how is that going to play out in this situation? I want to read part of the conversation they're having when Dunk says to Egg, it's good that you're concerned for Watt, and Watt, hilarious, and the rest of them, but the boot is only meant for dire need. How many eyes does Lord Bloodraven have? 1,000 eyes and one, he thinks to himself.
What a weird thing to think at that moment.
Yeah. What did your father tell you when he sent you off to Squire for me? To keep my hair shaved and or dyed and tell no man my true name, the boy said with obvious reluctance. And so then that great paragraph that you read about Dunk and Egg's magical year and a half that they've had together. But it just made me think about Dunk is very clearly concerned and worried about making sure that Egg stays hidden. The charm of Egg being a nobody has probably worn off a little bit because it's been a long time. And I don't know if he's felt like he's been in a situation.
I hadn't thought about that yet.
Dire enough. They've seen so many things that maybe there just hasn't been that much drama. For some reason, Egg is like really concerned about what's happening. And so I don't know if they've already had this conversation before where Egg has wanted to use the trump card and call for help.
Yeah.
Or if this is the first time that's happening. But just while that conversation is happening, for Dunk to be thinking, how many eyes does Lord Bloodraven have? 1,000 eyes and one. Bloodraven, a spider lady that people are scared of. There's got to be, I'm not saying there's necessarily like a connection there. I don't know anything, but that the concern of we can't have you even revealing yourself a little bit, whether or not you end up calling for extra help.
Maybe he thinks Bloodraven is watching him. Or
I'm sure he is.
I mean, or, from the future, but how can he know that?
Or he's just paranoid. I mean, what we know about Bloodraven is that he's got eyes everywhere. So what does that actually mean? There's no way for Dunk to know. But the common small talk is big enough to hear.
Yeah, they'd find out
that,
for sure.
Yeah. That,
plus, he's Hand of the King. He would know if they sent forces to help anyone anywhere.
No, for sure. But his reputation precedes him. And so I think
Dunk's so worried about his judgment.
Well, because I think of his reputation, you know, and he's got...
You use the boot. I will now hurt you?
Not even necessarily about using it. I think it's about just having Egg in his possession.
Right.
Like Egg with him.
Oh, so you think Bloodraven doesn't know that Egg's with him?
Yeah, that's my guess.
That would be
interesting. That's my guess. Because, well, he mentions it. He's like, everybody thinks that you went back
right,
to the castle.
Right, but I didn't know if he included if he was included as everybody.
Maybe not, but... And maybe he can't be because he's so intimately tied into like what's going. If he's the Hand of the King, he's going to be intimately tied in. But
my
reading was that he was worried that Bloodraven was going to know that Egg was with him.
That's very intriguing.
So
yeah, I guess it would be a problem with him. He'd be like, no, you can't do that because this is part of our fancy blood.
Right.
We can't risk this.
Right.
But it's not ultimately his choice, but he could ultimately tell even Egg's father what to do.
And he seems scary enough of a guy that, and Dunk had that situation
with
him.
He's like, just give me Egg and I'll drink his blood instead and we'll call it even.
So an interesting thought to have while Egg is talking.
That's what I thought.
Yeah.
So that's probably what it is then. That makes more sense. I was confused when I read it.
That's my thought. So we'll see, but
what do you think would happen? If he used his boot, what would happen? Do you think if the adventure's over now? They come and help and the adventure's over?
Potentially. I mean, maybe.
Because Egg, I think, really just wants to save these people. And he I don't think he takes it very seriously, them coming and helping, because he's just, you know, like, this is my family. He doesn't see it like Dunk does.
Totally. But it would become the talk of the town, the talk of Westeros. It's not like him, because maybe the fear is that he couldn't go back undercover if he was discovered, because there would be songs written about this, you know, this poor little...
What a cool thing to write a song about.
Yeah, I feel like, I mean, that's my guess, is that this would become one of those legends, potentially. Like, this seemingly nobody turns out to be the kid of the king, and the king comes... That's perfect for...
Save their water.
Yeah, that's perfect for some sort of legendary song. And then Dunk couldn't take him because they would know who this kid was wherever they ended up going.
They should just send him to the Weber's estate and like a Targaryen host and be like, all right, get this dam down.
Yeah.
It hurts the rest of the lawn down here. See, there's ways around it.
There is.
There's ways. All they have to do is write a letter.
But Ben has already shed blood.
Yeah, you're right.
So I feel like that's kind of the issue.
You're right. It's over.
They have to fight.
Hmm.
So I don't know how much time they have to get their boys ready, but...
That's the thing. We'll find out.
I don't think they have that much time. I think that like today may have been it.
So Dunk takes a bath and Egg helps him fill up the water. Notable moments from the bath. It takes 12 buckets of water to fill up the hot bath. They each had to be individually boiled. Gotta say, 12 buckets is not so bad for a bath. Baths are even harder filled up in modern bathtubs, right? And I was just going to transition to Owens prematurely because I think this ending should be read. Though he and Egg had been given thick straw pallets down in the cellar, Dunk preferred to sleep up on the roof. The air was fresher there, and sometimes there was a breeze. It was not as though he need have much fear of rain. Egg was asleep by the time Dunk reached the roof. He laid on his back with his hands behind his head and stared up at the sky. The stars were everywhere. Thousands of thousands of them. It reminded him of the night at Ashford Meadow, before the tourney started. He had seen a falling star that night. Falling stars were supposed to bring you luck, so he told Tonsil to paint it on the shield. But Ashford had been anything but lucky for him. Before the tourney ended, he had almost lost a hand and a foot, and three good men had lost their lives. I gained a squire, though. Egg was with me when I rode away from Ashford. That was the only good thing to come out of all that happened. He had hoped that no stars fell tonight.
What's going to happen next?
The Sworn Sword, Part 3, next. But first... We got to do our own. Hannah, did you save more than one? Because I sure did.
I saved a bunch of them, but I'm going to have to give my own to one specific thing.
Let's go.
As always, I have to pick one of them. We already read it more than once, but I just have to give my own to Dunk reminiscing on his time with Egg and how he'd served him for a good year and all the things they had done together. Because I put a little heart in it next to my book because I just love their relationship, and I love that it's blossomed, and I wish that we could see the time in the deep sands of Dorne and in these ships, etc., etc., and these inns and these ditches. But
the ditches.
I thought that was really, really nice. So I want to give my own to that paragraph.
She gave her own to that because he was chasing down Tonsil and Egg was helping him. It was on the banks of the Checky Water that I kissed a girl for the first time. A cousin, she was. Nice. My uncle's youngest daughter of the Osgreys of Leafy Lake. They are all gone now, even her.
How old is that guy? Because everybody he mentions is gone. It makes me feel so sad.
Yeah. It's that Osgrey blood. He's a direct descendant of the Little Lion.
Listen, strapping old man.
Own two. Will we get swords and helms and chainmail? The youngest of the three Watts wanted to know. Why, sure you will, said Bennis. Just as soon as you kill one of the Windows knights and strip his bloody corpse, make sure you stick your arm up his horse's ass, too. That's where you'll find his silver. He pitched young Watt beneath his arm until the lad squealed in pain, then marched the whole lot of them off to Watt's wood to cut some spears. And oh, I'm not done. Oh, we already read my own three. That was about making more bastards. And here's own four. Via Egg. Girls are so stupid, he would say. The next one who touches me is going into the river. Amen, brother.
I love when he described Standfast as a castle only by courtesy.
Yeah.
I feel like that sets the tone really well. So
we posted our call for Owens a little close to recording, so we have one own for you from Margot, who was quick to the draw. Margot gives their own to Treb for having the coolest name. There you go.
So if you want to send in your owns, we'll give you a little retweet. You can follow us on Twitter or on Instagram by searching for Game of Owns.
Don't forget gameofowns.com/merch to get your summer gear before it gets cold all the time and we replace it with winter gear. Remember, the dragons did that and no one else.
I feel like we need to get some Venice merch.
Oh my God, that's a good idea. Let's do that. Some sour leaf?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's like a foot that has red splattered on it, mm-hmm. and it says, Brave Venice.
Venice the Menace.
Venice the Menace, yeah, yeah. Did you see that tweet?
No.
I tweeted that.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, yeah.
Look at us.
Yeah, I said Stannis the Menace or Venice the Menace. Which one?
Nice.
That's the end of this podcast. We're going to be back next week with part 3.
Thanks, guys, for reading along with us, for being on our Sworn Sword journey, and we'll be back with part 3 next week.
See ya.
See you then.